Okay, we're beginning here at the top of Kuf Zayin Amud Aleph, the new parak. The Mishnah begins, Beit Shammai Omrim, Eimim Anim El Arusot. So here the parak is talking about the issue of Miun, the ability of a Tana to unwind or undo a marriage that was only Midir Rabbanan. All these cases here are cases where the girl is married Midir Rabbanan. A girl can be married Midir Rabbanan for two reasons. She can either be married Midir Rabbanan because she's a Yitomah, she is an orphan, her father passed away, and therefore her father can't marry her off. Her father has the ability to marry off midoraita, minatorah, and if her father's not there, then that doesn't exist. She is a ktana, she is underage, so she can't marry herself off because she can't accept the kinyan as a ktana. The Rabbanan empowered her mother and her brother to marry her off so that Benot Yisrael would not be hefker, and that she would be able to get married. So there is this institution of marriage midirabanan for the ktana who is an orphan. Another possibility is what we call the yatoma bechaye avia, which is an orphan in the lifetime of her father, which is if her father already married her off once, deoraita, and then she was divorced from that marriage, she gets a get from that marriage, that marriage is unwound midoraita, but then now this girl is on her own reconnaissance because her father no longer has authority over her because he already married her off once, and he gave her to the Baal. The Baal gave her a get and released her. So now there is nobody who is in charge of her. Now she becomes a ktana, but a yotoma b'chayei aviha, where she can't marry herself off technically. But we allow for a kedushin derabanan. Again, in this instance, you could create a kedushin derabanan. Miyun is used to unwind kedushin derabanan. It's used to unwind any time. You have a case where the Rabbanan instituted the kiddushin for the ktana, this is the equivalent of a get. They have an annulment that unwinds that kiddushin, that unwinds that nisuin. So therefore here we're talking about either a ktana who is really an orphan, or a ktana who is a yitoma b'chayei aviha because she already went through one marriage de oraita and has been divorced from that marriage. So in either instance, if she gets married, the ability for her to get out of that marriage is miyun, which is that the ability to annul the marriage in order for her to continue on now and then make decisions. Over here we say, you only can invoke or utilize miyun when it is an arusa, before she has nisuin. Doesn't matter if it's erusin or nisuin, either one of them, the girl is still allowed to utilize this miyun in order to unwind the marriage. In the Mishnah over here, Ben Beit Shammai says that, ein memanim l'nisuot, many of the Rishonim believe that that's only lechatchila. B'diavad, they agree that the miyun does work over here. It's only lechatchila that they say that the miyun doesn't work, because technically, midir rabbanan, there shouldn't be no reason why. It's all what we say later on, that these are gzerot, that prevent us from wanting to do it. But if she does it, we're going to say the annulment does go through, b'diavad. And that's only lechatchila. Beit Shammai says that she should not be annulling a marriage. Beit Shammai omim, babau, velo b'yavam. Beit Shammai says that she can only do this or annul this marriage with the husband, but not with the yavam. Beit Elomim babal uba yavam. She has the ability to unwind it with either one of the parties here. Beit Shammai omim bifanav, Beit Elomim bifanav shelo bifanav. So Beit Shammai says it must be done in front of the husband, whereas Beit Elel says it can be done in front of the husband or not, even not in front of the husband, meaning in front of a Beit Din without the husband being present. Beit Shammai omim bebeit din. It can only be done in front of a beit din. Beit din shel mumchin. Beit Hillel omim bebeit din shelo bebeit din. Whether it's in front of mumchim or not mumchim, either way it is fine. It's interesting here that for miyun we're going to require a beit din of mumchin, but for things that are d'oraita like chalitza, you only need three hejotot, you don't need mumchim. That's because the chachamim wanted to give a certain ma'amad to the nisuei ktana and to the miyun of ktana. That's one. Number two is they also wanted to somewhat dissuade her from doing this miyun, because we don't want a young girl going ahead and getting married and annulling, getting married and annulling the marriages. So therefore we do it in Beit Din, which would push her a little harder not to do this because it would be a public affair rather than some private ceremony. Amar lehem Beit Hillel leBeit Shammai, me'me'enet v'hi ktana, afilu dalet v'hei pe'amim. This really comes out of the middle of nowhere. It's not necessarily connected or a proof to the position of Beit Hillel. But it's all of a sudden Beit Hillel says to Beit Shammai, "Meme'enet v'ktana, if she's a ktana, she could go ahead and use this annulment, afilu dalet v'hei pe'amim, four or five times. Amar lehem Beit Shammai, ein b'not Yisrael hefker. That the young girls in Israel can't be made into hefker. They can't go around marrying four or five people in a short span of time. Elamema enit. If she chooses to annul the marriage, she does that. Umamtenet et shetagdil. And then she has to wait until she grows up. Vitamein vitinase. And then she'll perform miyun and get married. Why she needs a second miyun is questionable over here. That the Gemara will discuss. And then she can get married. So Beit Shammai only allows this to happen once, not multiple times, as opposed to Beit Hillel, who has it happen multiple times. Now, that might be why Beit Hillel brings this over here, because of the previous or the last statement in the Mishnah, which was Beit Shammai requires it before Beit Din, whereas Beit Hillel says it can be in front of Beit Din or not in front of Beit Din. If you believe that she can only do miyun once, then taking it to Beit Din is not a big deal. If you think she can be ma'in four or five times, that starts to make it into a little bit of a farce if she ends up in Beit Din four or five times performing miyun. And maybe that's why Beit Hillel believes that it doesn't have to be in front of a Beit Din each time, because otherwise you're somewhat diminishing the power of the institution if she keeps utilizing this type of annulment. I'm Rav Yehuda Mar Shmuel. My time with the Beit Shammai. What's the reasoning behind Beit Shammai's position? The fee? She'ein t'nai b'nisuin. Because one cannot embed a condition in nisuin. Because once the nisuin comes about, once the marriage is consummated, all t'naim, all conditions are waived. Now, this is interesting only because Shmuel himself believes that you can't have a condition that survives the consummation of the marriage. And therefore, how come over here he's saying that this is Beit Shammai's opinion? Most of the Rishonim have a real issue with this. You can see there's a large Tosfot over here dealing with it. And he has an alternate girsa that many of the Rishonim take up, which is that the statement here is Amar Yehuda Amar Rav. Because remember, Rav Yehuda is a Talmud both of Shmuel and of Rav. And therefore, if you have Amar Yehuda Amar Rav, it would make more sense because Rav is the one who says that there are no Tanaim in Nisuin. And therefore, if the statement's made by Amar Yehuda Amar Rav, then it would work out just fine. The other possibility, according to some of the Rishonim, although Tosafot rejects this, is that Beit Shammai is the one he's saying. He's saying, in Beit Shammai, there's no Tanaim in Nisuin, but according to Beit Hillel, there would be. But as Tosafot points out over here, that doesn't work so well, because seemingly Beit Hillel has the same position here. The only reason they have a different position, we'll see why, but it's not because they believe there's Tanaim in Nisuin, and therefore it would still be a problem for Shmuel. The other possibility here is that this Tanaim Nisuin is very different than any of the other Tanaim that we've talked about. In the past, we've talked about an exogenous condition in the marriage. Pay me money. You have to do such and such, and then the marriage will go through. We're waiting for such and such, and then the marriage goes through. The t'nai, the condition, is independent of the marriage itself. Over here, the t'nai in the nisuin is the condition that the marriage itself is conditional. That if I so choose to annul the marriage will then be unwound, annulled automatically. That's a t'nai or a condition in the marriage itself. So it might be that within Shmuel's position, you could differentiate like that and say that Shmuel says, when is a t'nai overrun? So then you could differentiate here and that Shmuel says here that there is ain t'nai b'nisuin. Over here is because it's such a fundamental condition in the marriage, that's why the nisuin overrides it. On the other hand, when you're talking about variables on the outside, there you can see those variables surviving the marriage because those conditions are not a condition in the marriage or functionally in the marriage itself. Here we have the first opinion of an Amora. We're going to have four opinions about what the position of Beit Shammai is based on. So now Shmuel says, my time is Beit Shammai. Why does Beit Shammai say that ein memanim ela rusot? Why can you only do with the rusot and not nisuot? Because there's no t'nai v'nisuin. You can't leave a condition open inside of the nisuin. So by definition, miyun, the annulment, is built into the marriage, which says that if I so choose, I can unwind this marriage. So they're saying that is okay when you're dealing with Erusin. When you're dealing with Nisuin, you can't do something like that. So therefore, here we're talking about either a Ktana, who is really an orphan, or a Ktana, who is a Yitoma b'chayei avia, because she already went through one marriage, the Oraita, and has been divorced from that marriage. So in either instance, if she gets married, the ability for her to get out of that marriage is Miyun, which is that the ability to annul the marriage in order for her to continue on now, and then make decisions. According to Beit Shammai, that means that she can not marry anybody else. She'll have to wait till she grows up. According to Beit Hillel, she can go ahead and get have another marriage, meet the Rabbanan. The assumption being that this miyun functions some way that unwinds the marriage retroactively. It's not that miyun is a prospective type of termination of the marriage, but miyun is a retroactive unwinding of the marriage. So that's where we have this statement of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, which is that the reason that Beit Shammai says it doesn't work by Nisuin is because you can't do that. You can't leave this opening in the Nisuin that allows you to unwind the Nisuin, that you leave this. If I so choose, I'm going to unwind this Nisuin. You just can't do that. So therefore, it's overridden by the Nisuin, and she's locked into this marriage. She can't do Miyun. Ve'i Nisua Tema'in, if we allow a Nisua Midrabanan to reject the marriage, Ati the Meimar, people are going to say, Yesh Tnaei Ben Nisuin. People are going to think you can have conditions built into Nisuin. So the Gemara says, okay, that's great. Nechlesa l'chupa v'lo nivala ma'ikah l'meimar. If she entered the chupa but has yet to have biyah, maybe then she could invoke miyun over there. So b'zikah l'meimar, the fish ain't tanayei b'chupa. Because there are no tanayim, there are no conditions that you can build into the chupa. The same thing happens over there. Chupa and nisuin override conditions because there's what we call chiba. There's a certain amount of love, closeness that's generated. Generally with bi'ah, we say it's a chibata bi'ah, or such an intimate act. A person, if they enter into such an intimate act, and they don't want their bi'ah to be a bi'ah znut, then clearly they waived all conditions in that situation. The same thing might be true with chupa, that's why the Gemara is asking about it. Chupa doesn't have bi'ah, doesn't have chibat bi'ah. The Gemara's answer is that chupa has a similar status to bi'ah, in the sense that there's a certain amount of closeness, intimacy that is generated through the chupa, even though it's not necessarily physical intimacy at this time, but that's enough to override any conditions built into Nisuim. So Gemara says, okay, what about Masara Av L'Shul Chei Abal? What happens when the father gives over his daughter to the messengers of the husband? At that point in time, she's already considered to be a Nisua. She has yet to have Chupa. She has yet to have Bi'ah. So is that enough to override all the conditions there? Ma'ika L'Meimar? Lo Plug, Lo Rabbanon. Lo Plug. Lo Plug means, Rabbanon, don't differentiate. When the Rabbanim put in an institution, they try to make it objective as possible in order to protect against violations of the Torah or mistakes being made by the assumption of what people see over here. If they make it objective and across the board, it's much more easily understood, more easily enforced, and that people will keep it. And number three is you get the result that you want, which is nobody has conditions inside of Nisuin. If you allow it in certain circumstances, then people will then allow it in the other circumstances, and you won't get the type of result that you want. So Rabbanan said, no conditions in Nisuin, no matter what. That doesn't matter, Nisuin that comes from Biyah, Nisuin that comes from Chupa, or Nisuin that comes from Misira Labal. All of those, the Tanaim, or the Tanaim, the conditions that are built in there are wiped out at that time, as soon as Nisuin comes to fruition. And therefore, there's no condition left, and you cannot then annul the marriage. Because the condition that was built in, that she has the right to annul it, was wiped out by the Nisuin. Why won't I allow that? Because if I allow a Katana to do that, a Gdola, a real married woman, is going to think that she has the right to unwind a marriage with a Tanai, and that's just not the case. Tanaim are wiped out by Nisuin. Ubedelo, mido yode de Nisue Katana de Rabbana Ninhu. So Beit Hillel, and this is what Tosfo points out, Beit Hillel does not fundamentally disagree with Beit Shammai here. They agree that Nisuin wipes out the Tanai. So then why don't they worry about this? Because people will know to differentiate between the marriage of a ktana, of a minor, versus the marriage of a full-grown woman. Full-grown woman, you're right. All the tanaim are wiped out. She can't walk away from the marriage. On the other hand, by a ktana, if you let her do miyun and annul the marriage, you're not going to think that that means that all conditions survive nisuin. There's a difference between a ktana and a gdola. We can make a clear demarcation of the halacha here and the halacha there. But what you see from here is that Beit Hillel fundamentally agrees with Beit Shammai that there aren't tnaim. You can't put conditions in the Nisuin. And that's why Tosafot says you can't say that Shmuel is just saying this in the position of Beit Shammai and not of Beit Hillel. Because clearly Beit Hillel is holding the same thing here. It's just that they're not gozer. Tana, alto real Nisuin. So that's the first answer that we have is Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel or Amar Yehuda Amar Rav. The next one is Rabba v'Rav Yosef. They try to explain the position of Beit Shammai, which is Damrei Tarvayel, they both say, time of the Beit Shammai, the fish ain't Adam osib bilato bilat znut. Person does not make his bi'ah into a bi'at znut, which is he won't want to enter into a marriage in which the consummation of the marriage and all intimacy he has with this woman, if she so chooses to annul the marriage, then retroactively all intimacy that he had with her was znut. It wasn't considered to be in the context of marriage. Now some suggest this is only in the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, who says a panui and pnuya, who have bi'ah, that's considered to be znut. Or you can look at it as a more loose term of znut. Znut not in a halachic sense, but znut means that they had intimacy outside the context of marriage. And people don't want that built into their marriage. That there's a possibility that this girl can unwind the marriage and leave him in a position where all this time he's been living with a single woman, unmarried. So nichnasa the chupa v'lo nivala ma'ika the meimar. If that's the problem here, then what about chupa without biyah? Why in that case, there's no problem of biyah znut. Why can't she be ma'in at that time? So ma'ika the meimar, lo nechale davi chupa di surah. He doesn't want to have a chupa that's made out of isur. Here he is secluded, or he brings a woman into his house, and that's done in a context which is not marriage, again, which is a problematic. He's going to have a chupa of isura, or a chupa that will lead to biat isur, and therefore he doesn't want that. Masar av l'shukhei abal ma'ikah l'meimar. Again, in the case where the av hands over the girl to the baal, yes, there's nisuin there, but maybe she can unwind it, because there's no biat isur, there's no chupat isur. Until the consummation of the marriage, maybe she should be able to unwind it at that point in time. Lo palug rabbanan. The rabbanan did differentiate in their gzera. Beit Hillel. Kevin tika kiddushin uktuba lo ato l'meimar b'dibila to bilat znot. He says that since there was a formal marriage here, he had kiddushin, he had ketubah, everything was done according to the formality of the law and the procedures were correct, people are not going to look on this and say, ah, that's a bilat znot, look at this, he's been living with this single woman all this time. No, since it was done in the context or a framework of marriage, even though she's able to unwind it retroactively, but from an optical standpoint, it looks like he was married to her all along, and now she annulled it. It looks like she annulled it prospectively, even though really it's retroactively, and therefore people are not going to think of it as being a biat znut, and that's why Beit Hillel says she can do miyun even at the level of nisuin. So now, Tosafot does point out that Beit Shammai's opinion in other places are that a person is mishaveh biato biat znut. That sometimes we do allow for that, and there are certain cases where Beit Shammai seems to believe that that is the case. So Tosafot differentiates, and he says it depends on the structure or the conditions of the case. If it's obvious from the context that this person doesn't care, then we will say that a person is willing to make his biyah biyah znut. But mi'as tam, in a case like this, where the person intended to marry this woman, and he doesn't want his biyah 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 znut, we have nothing in the context that suggests that that's the case. Over there, Beit Shammai is going to believe that ein adam oseh bilato bilat znut. That is some sort of chazakah that a person wants to have intimacy in the proper context. And he wants to have it in the context of marriage, and he is afraid that if this woman unwinds it, if we grant her the right to do miyun et nisuin, then he's going to have biyat znut. So now what is he going to do? Then he won't marry the young tana. Why is that a big deal? Well, then that will ruin the takanat chachamim. The whole takanat chachamim of nisuin or kiddushin and nisuin, marriage for tana, was in order that she doesn't be left, she's not left out, so that people will marry her, and people will take care of these young girls. So if you now create a situation in which she can unwind it, and that will cause people not to want to marry her, then you defeated the whole purpose of the takana. The whole takana was to allow marriages to ketanot, to protect them. And now, if you say they can do miyun, you're going to prevent people from carrying through with that takana, because they're not going to want to marry these women, because of the risks that are associated with her annulling this marriage. Rapapa Amar, Taima de Beit Shammai Mishum Peri. The reason that Beit Shammai says there's no miyun from nisuin is because of the fear of the peirot. So what does that mean? That means that when a person gets married, once you have nisuin, once you reach the level of nisuin, then the wife brings in certain types of property into the marriage, or nichsei tzon bazel, or nichsei malog. In nichsei malog, she brings them into the marriage. The husband then is the quote-unquote balim over the property. Any produce, any output of that property belongs to the husband, but the principal, the core property itself, remains with the woman. And therefore, at the time of divorce or the time of the death of the husband, then that property returns as is to the woman. But the peirot, the output, is eaten by the husband all along. So what we're afraid of over here is that the husband will be abusive towards the property because he knows there's a risk that this woman can unwind the marriage. Why will he invest in her property to keep the principal up? Why will he make sure to take care of the property? What he's going to do is basically drain it for as much as he can, because he knows there's a risk this woman could just unwind the marriage at any point, and then he'll be left with nothing. So he may as well get as much as he can out of the property before she acts to unwind the marriage. So if we want to protect her and her property, what should we do? We should make sure that he doesn't think that this marriage is going to terminate. If the marriage doesn't terminate, then he has a vested interest in maintaining the property, because he will continue to eat the payroll from the property. Plus, we have the ability to, quote-unquote, sue him for the value of the property if he's not taking care of it. The relatives can come in and say, you're not taking care of the property. Tosafot points out that, what do you mean, Bishum Peire? He's entitled to peirot. But he's not doing anything wrong over here. He's eating the peirot of the property, which he's entitled to until she does miyun. He gets to keep them. So Tosafot says that they're talking about here a peirot, or what they call abusive peirot, which is that he's taking value out of the property at the expense of the principal. Not only is he taking the output of the property, he's not even taking the leasehold on the property, but he's taking stuff that will ruin the property itself. He's eating into the principal to get his payroll out. In that case, the woman won't have the ability to get it back from him, either because legally she doesn't have the right to do it, or because she's not going to want to go to Beit Din to fight with this guy. Tana is not going to want to go to Beit Din to get her money back. So because of that issue, Beit Shammai said, we got to protect the marriage, or we got to protect the property of the girl. How do we do that? We say that she cannot annul the marriage. When she can't annul the marriage, then he's not going to abuse the property or the value or product of the property, because he knows he's going to be in this marriage for the long haul. Time of Beit Hillel, Mishum Peri. Beit Hillel agrees that Perot are also an issue, but time of Beit Shammai, Mishum Peri, Diyamart Nisua Timain. If you think that Nisua can walk away, Shamit Vachilu Mina. He's going to eat, he's going to take as much as he can, he's going to party until there's nothing left. The Sof, the Mepel Kaima, because he has a huge risk here that this girl can walk off and take the property back from him. So he wants to maximize his value while he still has the property. And we want to prevent that type of behavior, because that's abusive towards the property. So how do we do that? We say, you're in a marriage now, you're not coming in, it's not going to be unwound. The other hand, Beit Hillel, Adarabba, came into Amar Timain, Ashbuche Mishabachlu. And the other way around, that he says, wait a minute, if you tell him that she can walk away from this marriage, he's actually going to make the property better, invest in the property. Because if I don't do the right thing here, her relatives are going to come and say, why are you hanging out with this guy? Why are you married to this guy? They will encourage her to annul the marriage. So there'll be pressure from relatives to unwind the marriage, and then she'll walk away from the marriage. So if he's abusive towards the property, that will be a cause for the annulment. So Beit Shammai is afraid the annulment will cause the husband to act in an improper manner, so we eliminate the annulment. Beit Hillel says it's an incentive for him to act properly. He's at risk of losing his marriage here. So he will act properly so that he doesn't lose the marriage, or he doesn't cause the girl to want to do miyun. And therefore it's an incentive. If you have miyun here, he'll act in a better way instead of an improper way. Rav Amar, here's our fourth explanation of the position of Beit Shammai, which is, Hainu time to Beit Shammai, Shein Adam Torech Besuda Umafsida. Person doesn't want to invest in a big party, in a big chasno, and then all of a sudden lose it all. Why is a person going to invest in having a huge wedding only to know that he can lose this day later, a week later, the girl can say, I'm out of here, and annul the marriage. So he's not going to want to have a huge chasno like that. So again, as we've said before, we're not worried about the wedding itself, which would be nice to have a nice wedding, but we're afraid that people will not then want to get married. Because if they know their investment in the marriage could go down the drain, or the investment in this wedding will go down the drain, they will be reluctant, reticent to marry these ketanot. And again, you've defeated the purpose of the takanat chachamim to allow ketanah to get married, because nobody's going to want to marry a ketanah. So if we say no miyun, then the guy knows when I invested in the wedding's going to be for the good, meaning that it's going to be around for a long time. This girl's not going anywhere. Beit Hillel, Tavayu Nechluhu, both of them are happy with the wedding. Because then they both get a shame of being married. Meaning that there's a certain level for a woman, to be a married woman, to say that, we say that all over Shas, that a woman would take certain amount of risks or compromises just to be married, because the shame of being married is so important to a woman. On the other hand, a man also, a man, a certain amount of stature is that he has a wife, he has a marriage, he's not a single man. So the fact that that is an incentive for them to get married, even though it costs money, or they have to invest in the seudah, or in the wedding, that they're fine with doing, because there is benefit from that. There is benefit in the investment in the wedding, which is that they both get this name of being married. Even though there's a risk that it could be unwound later on, nevertheless, at the time, the public display of them getting married is valuable to both parties over here, and therefore, they're not going to not get married because of the expenditure in the wedding. Beit Shammai Omein Babal Avalobi Yavam. Beit Shammai says you should only perform miyun with the husband himself, but not with the Yavam. She has the ability to unwind it with either one of the parties here. Amar Rabbi Hoshaya, Mima'enet l'ma'amaro, ve'enu mima'enet l'zikato. So Rabbi Hoshaya says that she can perform miyun to the ma'amar of the Yavam. If the Yavam does ma'amar with her, then she can unwind that ma'amar, because that's the equivalent of kiddushin. Just like by kiddushin, she can unwind the kiddushin through miyun. So it's over here, she can unwind the ma'amar that he does, which is kiddushin derabanan, in the context of Yavam. She can unwind that with miyun. But she cannot unwind the miyun with miyun, the zika. The zika that's created even possibly here, de'oraita, between her and the Yavam, that she cannot unwind with miyun. So I'm Rav Chista, my time with Rabbi Hoshaya. What's the reason behind Rabbi Hoshaya's position? Ma'amar dimi da'ata. Mamar, which is generated through her consensual agreement, Metziakra, therefore she can unwind it. I mean, it wasn't something that was forced upon her, it was something that she accepted. She accepted the Mamar. There's some sort of agreement between them, and therefore she can unwind that agreement or annul that agreement. That's why Mion works. Zika de Baal Korcha, Zika, which comes against her will, the Zika is forced upon her. She was married to one person, her husband passed away. When her husband passed away, automatically now she's connected to this Yavam. Not of her choosing, but because of the marriage that she was previously entered into. So therefore, Lo Matziakwa, therefore she can't unwind it. She wasn't a willing participant or consensual participant in this connection, and therefore she doesn't have the ability to unwind it. Somebody says, wait, V'harai Bia de Baal Korcha, what about the fact that Bia can be done against her will? Umatziakra, and there she is able to unwind it, meaning that she doesn't need to get the Biato, because Beit Hillel says that you can be Me'emet in the Avam. So, of course, if Rabbi Hoshaya is saying this within the position of Beit Hillel, the position of Beit Hillel is not only can you perform Mion with the husband, you can perform Mion with the Avam. So over here, according to Rabbi Hoshaya, you can perform Mion with the Mamar. You can perform Mion after she consummates the marriage, after she has Bia. You can't perform Mion to eliminate the Zika in that interim stage. So that's a little bit strange. Why is it that she has the ability to unwind in all situations except in that stage of the Zika? Especially since Bia can be generated by Baal Korcha, which is that she doesn't have any choice. And she may not even have to be consensual with Bia. Now we do say that she should be consensual. We want the Yevamah to participate in the process of Yibam. But technically, Min HaTorah, if he had Bia with her Baal Korcha, she becomes his wife and the Yibam is consummated in that situation. Yet she still has the ability to unwind it. She has the ability to use Mion in that case. So why is that? According to Rabbi Hoshaya, that's an inconsistency in his reasoning according to Rav Chista. The Gemara says, Ella, Bia u'mamar, dehuka avid, matzi akra. Bia and mamar, which are done by the husband or the avam, she has the ability to unwind it. Zika, derachmana ramala, Zika, which is generated by the Torah, by neither of these two parties, lo matzi akra, she doesn't have the ability to unwind it. So that's the reasoning behind Rabbi Hoshaya's position, which is, in cases where this is a man-made situation, man-made situations can be unwound with Mion. On the other hand, if it's a Torah-imposed situation, Mion can't unwind that because Mion is a rabbinic institution that unwinds things that are connections that were created midrabanan. When you have these things that are connections midoraita, quote-unquote, because over here we're talking about all in the context of derabanan. She married only derabanan, so obviously the zika is only midrabanan, but in a paradigmatic sense where it follows the Zika of the Torah, and Zika is something that's generated by the Torah, nothing to do with either of their party's actions, there she cannot unwind it with Miyun. Of course, there's a discussion amongst the Rishonim about how this Bia Baal Korcha works. What is the case exactly here that she has Bia Baal Korcha, but yet she's not a Yivama? It's a little bit of a difficult situation, because Bia Baal Korcha is really the consummation of the Yibum. So what is exactly the scenario? The Rishonim discussed the different possibilities, but so far we've established according to Rabbi Hoshaya is that Mion works for Bia, Mion works for Mamar, it just does not work for Zika. On the other hand, Ula Amar, Memenet af Zikato. It works even for the Zika. Ula says Mion works across the board according to Beit Hillel. Works for Mamar, works for even when she's waiting, and it works even after she consummates the Yibum, she can use Mion to unwind it. So my time, Nisu'ei Kamai Ka'akra. She is unwinding the original Nisu'in. And so therefore, Zika is not a problem over here. Zika that the Torah imposed on her, but it's still a derivative of the original marriage. So if she just annuls the original marriage, she can take away the Zika. The Zika is a product of her original marriage. As long as she can unwind the original marriage, then the Zika won't come into existence. So she's not attacking the Zika directly. She's attacking the Zika in a circumscript way, which is that she unwinds the original marriage, and that by definition takes away the Zika. So it's not like she's saying no Zika. She's saying no original marriage, and therefore no Zika. That's a derivative of the fact that once you don't have a marriage, you don't have Zika anymore. And that might be exactly what Rabbi Hoshaya disagrees with. And he says that you cannot be oker the Kiddushin Rishonim. The first husband has already passed away. When you're doing the Mion over here, the Mion is directed at the Yavam and not at the first husband, and therefore you cannot be Oker, the original Kiddushin, which would then cause the Zika to fall away automatically. And that is evidenced by the next question we're about to see in the Gemara that's only posed to Ula and not to Rabbi Hoshaya, showing you that this position of Ula that you are oker the kiddushin, the original kiddushin of Afreya, is the position of Ula, but not the position of Rabbi Hoshaya. So now the Gemara says, Etave rovo de Ula, kol shi yicholala me'ein, velo mi'ana. So anybody, this goes all the way back to the beginning of the Masechta, anybody who can perform miyun, velo mi'ana, and she didn't perform miyun, tzaratacho letze velo mi'tia bemet. Then her co-wife can only have chalitza, not yibum. Again, two brothers, Reuben and Shimon. Reuben married a woman, an independent third party, a woman. He also happened to marry his niece, Shimon's daughter. Then when Reuben passes away, then the daughter of Shimon plus this other independent wife fall to Shimon. In that case, they would go free without anything because you have erva. His daughter is an erva. Therefore, it's an erva and the co-wife of an erva, they're released automatically. But what happens if the marriage of Reuben to Shimon's daughter, to his niece, was only a marriage midrabanan? Now, if Shimon's alive, then it has to be the case, not that her father passed away, she's an orphan, but a yitomah b'chaya avia. Shimon married her off once, she got divorced. Then Reuben marries her midrabanan. In that case, now you have Reuben married to Shimon's daughter, to his niece, midrabanan, and then married to another woman, midoraita. So as far as the Torah is concerned, he's only married to one woman, the co-wife. That's the only one he's married to. Now he dies, Reuben, and falls to Shimon. As far as Shimon is concerned, his daughter's involved, but his daughter was only a marriage to Rabbanan. So if she annuls that marriage, it would be as if she's not in the picture anymore. Whereas if she stays married, then it looks optically like you have an erva here and a co-wife with the erva. So what Rova is asking Ula is, according to you, who says that the mion here works retroactively to unwind the original marriage, why does it matter now that Reuven died, and now Shimon's daughter, who was only married to Reuven midrabanan, and her co-wife, fall to Shimon? Let her perform miyun at that time. If she performs miyun at that time, it unwinds the marriage retroactively, and it's as if she's not in the picture whatsoever. She's not in the picture, then the co-wife can either do yibum or chalitza. Why does she only can do chalitza in that case? So that's Rava's challenge to Ula's explanation over here. So I'm Rava Ula, kol sheyichol alamein, velo mi'ana, tzaratach choletzit velo mitya bemet. Why? V'amai? Tima ein hashto. Let her perform miyun at this time. V'takrina nisuei kamai. No marriage. V'tititya beim tzarata. Let the co-wife go ahead and get married at this point, perform the yibum. It says, tzarat erva shiny. When you're talking about a co-wife of an erva, there it's different. The Tani Rami Bar Yechezkel, again, we saw this early in the Masechta, that Rabbi Bar Yechezkel tells us that there's a difference between miyun b'bal. If the woman does miyun with her husband, muter laviv, she can marry his father. Meaning that if she annuls the marriage with the original husband, it's as if the marriage never existed. If the marriage never existed, then there's no relatives to her husband. So that means that she can marry any relative of her husband because she was never married to him. She can marry his father because no problem. They weren't related. They weren't married before to his son. It was only a extramarital affair, meaning that outside the context of marriage, and therefore she can go ahead and marry the father. We consider it to be anusat bino or mefutat bino. That all the intimacy that took place was either a case of anusa or mefuta in the figurative sense, and therefore she's allowed to marry the relatives over here without any problem. That's only true when she performs miyum with her husband. But biyavam, if she performs miyum with the yavam, asura laviv, she cannot marry the father. Now, it's the same father here, because remember, yibum is only performed by brothers who are related through a common father. So, in a case where she does miyun with her husband, she can marry his father. On the case where she performs miyun with the yavam, she can't marry the father. Why not? It's the same thing over here. She annulled the marriage retroactively. Why should there be any difference in these cases? So the answer is because of the optics over here. The optics are very different. Where she does miyun with her husband, there, the marriage was never there. She basically unwound the marriage. It was as if no marriage ever existed. On the other hand, when she does miyun with the yavam, then the marriage had impact. How do I know the marriage had impact? Because what's she doing with this yavam to start with? The only reason she's standing in front of this yavam now is because her original marriage threw her to the yavam. That means that you're giving a certain amount of power to the original marriage. Now, when she performs miyun at this point in time, even though she's unwinding the marriage retroactively, the fact that she's doing it with the yavam already shows or demonstrates that the first marriage had impact. Because otherwise she wouldn't be here in front of this yavam. So there, optically, it looks like she really was married, or the original marriage had tokef, and that's why if she performs miyun at that time, she may not marry the father, because it looks like the marriage really took hold. So that's what the Gemara says here. Alma, b'shat nefila nireit kikalato. At the time she falls to the Yavam, she starts to look like his daughter-in-law. Whereas until this point, the marriage, if she unwound it, would have been okay. The marriage didn't go through, there was something wrong, they really didn't get married. She could marry the father because he doesn't look like his daughter-in-law. As soon as she falls to Yibum, to the brother, that shows that there is something about this marriage that was real. And now she starts to look like his daughter-in-law. So Hachanami, also in our case, Bishat Nefila Nireit Kitzarat Bito. Also in our case here, where the daughter of Shimon, who's only married to Rabbanan, to his brother, falls to Shimon plus the co-wife, even if she was to perform Miyun at this time, optically, it looks like she was married to his brother. Why? Because she's performing Miyun with Shimon, her father, only because she was married to Reuven. That means that the marriage had impact. Since the marriage had impact, it looks like that she's really Tzarat Erva. If we let her perform Miyun now, and then let the co-wife go through with the marriage, people are going to think that Tzarat Erva can get married, can have Yibum with her. So we don't allow it to go through, because again, the optics here look terrible. The optics look like the marriage had impact. She was married to his brother, and now all of a sudden we're letting him marry the co-wife. So we don't want that to happen. So that's the answer. So that's Ula's answer to Rova. You're right, Rova. Technically, it should work. But optically, we don't want to do this because it doesn't look good. So now, Amarav, Miyana Bezeh Asura Lezeh. So here, Fred, this was your question earlier. Rav says that if she does Miyun with one of the brothers, she's then Asura with the other brothers. Miyun with one brother then eliminates all the brothers from the possibility of Yibum. Mida Hava Balad Get. It's the equivalent of giving a get. If one of the brothers gives a get to the Yavama, then she is disqualified from marrying any of the brothers here. So same thing here with the Miyun. If she performs Miyun with any one of the Yavamin over here, then that disqualifies her from performing Yibum with any of the brothers. Miyun is enough to unwind it. So that's right. The Gemara says, Balad get lav kevin di itzara la chad itzara lo lukulu. Just like by a get. If one of the brothers creates an Isser through handing her a get, that affects all the brothers, and they're all Isserim. Hachanami lo shna. So too over here, by Miyun, it should be the same thing. Once she performs Miyun with one of the brothers, she eliminates Yibum by all of them. Your question is fair. If she unwound the marriage retroactively, then there is no need for Yibum over here anymore, and she's really an independent party. She should be able to marry any of these individuals as brothers, as relatives of the first husband, because the first marriage didn't exist. It goes back to what Ula just said now, which is optically, if she fell to Yibum and she's performing Miyun with Yibum, it looked like she was married to the original brother, and we're not going to let her marry the brothers anymore because it looks like there's Yibum being performed after a dissolution of the process of Yibum. Ushmol Amar, Miyana Bezeh, Mutaret Lezeh. So Shmuel says, like you're just saying, if she does Miyun with one of them, she can get married to any one of the other brothers. V'lo Dami L'Balad Get. It's not similar to Balad Get. Balad get who the ka'avid ba? Because when a balad get, one of the yivamin does that with the yivama. One of the brothers gives the get to the yivama, and that's what disqualifies her. Hacha hi ka'avdebe. Here, she's the one acting. Da'amra lo re'ina b'cha v'lo tzvina b'cha. I have no interest in you. I do not want you. That's the lashon of the miyun, which basically says that I have no ratzon. I have no desire to be married to you. I don't want you, but I might want the other brother. So here she could interpret the language that she's using as a rejection of this particular individual, not a rejection of the Yibum process in general. So as opposed to by get, where one of the brothers acts, then he disqualifies or unwinds the Yibum because he is acting on behalf of all the brothers, even though they may not have empowered him, but he has that power to do this. So here she's the one acting. And the way that she acts is a rejection of this particular individual. So her rejection might be of him, not of any of the other brothers. Ravasi Amar, Mina Bezeh Muteret Afilu Lo. Ravasi goes as far as to say, even if she does Miyun with him, she can still marry him. So that the Miyun does not have impact. And if she so chooses, she can marry him. She can marry any of the brothers here, according to Ravasi. So now, Lema Kerav Hoshaya Sphirle. Let us say that Rav Asi holds like Rav Hoshaya. Damar eina meme'enet l'zikato. So that she does not have the ability to use miyun when it comes to zika. So what happens here is you have these brothers coming here that are now falling to her because of the Yibum process. She tries to use miyun over here. According to Rav Hoshaya, what happens when you try to use miyun against zika? It just doesn't work. So Rav Asi is saying that. It just doesn't work over here. And that's why she can still marry any of the brothers, including the one she did miyun with. Because she did nothing that was efficacious over here. Her action doesn't have any effect. So where it says, B'chad yavam al-chanami de-matzi akro. Hacha b'shnei yavamin askina and de-miyun l'chatzi zika. So Gemara says, no, maybe by one Yavam, we would think, Rav Asi would disagree with Ovishaya and say that, yes, the Mion has the ability to unwind the Zika when you're dealing with one brother. When you're dealing with a single brother who has the only Zika over here, there she can unwind it, disagreeing with Rav Ovishaya. On the other hand, Holcha b'shnei Yavamin askinin, over here we're dealing with multiple parties, each one who has a Zika with her. Dei Mion l'chatzi Zika, because Mion can't attack half a Zika. So the Mion here is not effective because she can't attack all the Zikot here through her Mion, and therefore her Mion with one of the parties does nothing, has no impact over here. So Rav Asi could be saying a statement even if he doesn't agree with Rav Ushaya. We thought originally Rav Asi's position is premised on Rav Ushaya, that Mion doesn't work by Zika. The answer is that's just not the case. He could disagree with Rav Ushaya and say that Mion works by Zika, but just in this case it won't work because here there are multiple brothers. By multiple brothers, Mion won't work against Zika because there are too many Zikot over here. The Mions can't unwind all the Zikot. Kiata Ravin, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. So now we have a memra brought from Rabbi Yochanan by Ravin. Mion abezeh, muteret achin. The one who does Mion with this individual, she is muter b'achim, but lo hodulo. And they didn't agree with him. Man lo hodulo. Who did not agree with him? So Amar Abayi, Abayi says Rav. Rav didn't agree with him. Rav is the one who says that if she does Mion with one of the brothers, she's a surah to all the brothers. So Rav was the one who disagreed with the position of Rabbi Yochanan, who says that muteret to the brothers. The assumption being that this statement of Rabbi Yochanan was that when she does miyun with the guy, she's muteret to the other brothers, but not to him. So that's why it would be Rav who disagreed. Rova Amar, Rava says, by Rabbi Ushaya, the one who was lohodolo was Rabbi Ushaya. Rabbi Ushaya disagreed with this position of Rabbi Yochanan, because even though it includes him, that's what Rashi says here, the iyun ami b'mashma.
So
here, the statement of Rabbi Yochanan is by number of brothers. Then she is still muteret. Not only muteret to the brothers, but even muteret to the individual themselves. That would go against Rav Ushaya's position. Rav Ushaya says the zika of a single brother, when you try to attack that zika, it doesn't work. The miyun is ineffective. So since the miyun is ineffective over here, that's why she can consummate the marriage. Rav Yochanan says that's not the case. The miyun is effective vis-a-vis this guy himself. So Rav Ushaya will disagree with that and say that when there's a case where it's just the brother, the one brother, the miyun will not be effective. Even though Rav Yochanan will say the miyun in that case is effective. Gamri la Rav Asi, and some say that the one who lo odulo was Rav Asi, and that Rabbi Yochanan's statement here was muteret to the brothers, only the brothers, exclusively, but not he himself. And Rav Asi says that's not the case, because she's muteret to all of them, not only to the brothers, but to he himself. So that would be, again, the way Rashi reads it, that would be incremental. Not only does Rav Ushaya not agree with him, even Rav Asi doesn't agree with him, because Rabbi Yochanan is suggesting over here that only the brothers are mutar, not the guy himself. And Rabbi Ushaya disagrees with that.
The Rishonim really debate over here the relationship between these different opinions, the opinion of Rabbi Ushaya, Ula, Rav Asi, Rav, and Shmuel. All who have opinions here with regards to the effectiveness of Miun, whether they are all really saying the same thing, but at different levels, or are they really differentiated in their opinions, or how close Rabbi Ushaya is to the position of Rav Asi, so on and so forth. The Rishonim really have different permutations as to their positions, ranging all the way from the position of the Ramban, where Miyun is able to wipe out the Kiddushin Rishonim according to everybody, and it's just a question of a Gzerah of the Marat Ayin over here, and the extent of that Gzerat Marat Ayin. So on the other side, where some of the Gaonim believe that all of them believe that Miyun has no impact over here, the extent it has no impact is that the Zika is still alive, and without any Chalitza here, she won't be able to unwind the Zika de Yavam here, and she'll still be bound to the relationship either with the brother or the brothers. And according to the different Amoraim, where Miyun is ineffective at dissolving the Zika, Rav Ushaya and Rav Asi at the most extreme saying that it has almost no impact, versus Rav and Shmuel who say that it has a significant impact in releasing this Yavamah from the Zikata Yibum. And that's what Tosafot here discusses, the interplay between these different positions and their rejection of Rabbi Yochanan's position.
Pishon the camel driver, Miana Ishtosh lo b'fanav. They allowed his wife to annul the marriage when he wasn't around. Amar lahem Beit Shammai, the Beit Hillel, Pishon Agamal b'midah kfusha madad. He was using a improper measurement, and therefore they treated him improperly. he was acting inappropriately with this woman, and therefore they did something inappropriate, meaning they went extra halacha, they went outside the halacha, and allowed her to annul the marriage even when he wasn't there. Because he was eating up her peyre, like what Beit Shammai described before. He was abusing the context of marriage and eating up her principal in her property and doing something wrong. So they wanted to get her out of this marriage because he was wasting away her property. Gemara says, wait a minute. If that's the reason that you annulled the marriage, pshita nesuahi, then they were definitely fully married. The marriage was consummated. Because you only get peyrot as a husband once nisuin goes through, not through erusin. If that's the case, Beit Shammai says you can't have mion once there's nisuin. So over here, not only is there mion in Shalom B'Fanav, you also have mion after nisuin. How's that possible? V'amrei Beit Shammai nisua lo mema'ana. Where it says, trei kitrei avdubei. Two knots they did to him, or basically here, they colluded against him twice. They acted in this improper way against him because he was acting improperly. What were the things they did improperly? They did two things improperly. They allowed her to annul the marriage even after nisuin, and they allowed her to annul the marriage when he wasn't there. But all this to protect her. So the Beit Din acted outside the confines of halacha, again, because it's only derabanan, so they have the ability to do this, so that's why they were allowed to act in this manner. Therefore, they protected the girl by going ahead and allowing her to perform miyum in this case. So that's what Tosafot mentions over here. Yishalmi parich ilo said davar shlo kashura matirin erva shlo. Just because the person acts inappropriately, all of a sudden you're matir and erva. So Tosafot answers in the end what I just said here. Vein zukushia kol kach. The ikar meimar the kedushei ktana derabanan inu. Ravkina rabbanan the kedushei minayu. Since all rabbinic, the rabbis can override the din derabanan of the kedushin derabanan. Right, so now Beit Shammai omrim b'fnei beitin u'shalo b'fnei beitim. It's not autumn. We have a Mishnah over there. Achalitza v'miyunim b'shlosha. The chalitza and miyun require three. Mantana. Who's the author of that position? Amarabah Beit Shammai. It's Beit Shammai, because here you're requiring three. Makes it sound like you need three dayanim, like Beit Shammai. Bayamara afilu tema beit hilal. Adkan lo kamri beit hilal d'lo b'inan mumchin. They don't require mumchim, those that have smicha. They agree you still need three. When they say shalom b'fnei beit din, it doesn't mean you can just do whatever you want. It means that you could have to do it in front of three, which are equivalent to a beit din. You just don't need beit din of smuchin. Kedetanya, beit shemai, omrim b'fnei beit din, u'beit hilal, omrim b'fnei beit din, shalom b'fnei beit din. Ve'elu ve'elu modim shetzarich shlosha. They both agree that you still need three. Whether it's in front of beit din or not in front of beit din, you need three. You need an acting beit din, even though it's not a quote-unquote proper beit din or a beit din of smuchin. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Machshirin b'shnayim. So Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Elazar, be Rabbi Shimon or be Rabbi Yossi, depends on the girsa that you have. They think that you can even have two. So I'm Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Nyume, I'm Rabbi Nachman, Alocha, Koto Zug. Over here, the Alocha is like them, that two suffices over here, because the question is, are we looking for a Beitin, or are we looking for a Dud? So is it that the Beitin is functioning like a Beitin to have the act of Miyon be official in front of a Beitin? Official act of Beitin, or we need two because we need Edim. We need people to evidence the fact that the Miyun took place. So how do we do that? We have Edim, so you need a minimum of two to do that, and that is the position of that of those two individuals. And Rav Nachman says, Alocha is like those two individuals. Beit Shammai omrim tima'in. That once she decides she wants to do Miyun, she gets one shot at that, she annuls the marriage, and then she waits until she grows up and does Miyun again. Mar says, V'ha'miyonoch adazimno. Why does she have to perform Miyun again when she comes of age, because she already did miyun at the time she annulled the marriage? So mashmo ad she tagdil b'tomer rotzei ani b'miyunim arishonim. We wait until she becomes of age and she affirms her rejection or annulment of the original marriage. Ulamar tartek tani. It's a bifurcated din over here, which is oshit tima'ein if it tagdil v'te'ares, or first of all, either she tima'ein, she rejects the marriage v'tagdil, and then she grows up and has a rusin with another person. Oh, she tamain vitinase the altar. Or she has the option to perform annulment now and to get married right away. Why? Because Beit Shammai believes that you can't do miyun from nisuin. So what Beit Shammai says, if a girl performs miyun while she's a ketana, she annuls a marriage, we're not going to allow her to get into another position of erusin. Because if she gets into another position of erusin, she could do miyun again and annul it again. We don't want that. So if she has an annulment, then she has to wait until she comes of age, and then she can have erusin, because then she can't back out of the erusin. On the other hand, if she agrees to get married and consummate the marriage immediately, then we will let her get married then after this miyun, because that'll be the end of her annulments. She'll know it now, and then she'll marry the next guy, and she'll be stuck with him until she gets older and can have a get, because there is no miyun from nisuin.
So that's what the two cases are. There's one case where she does miyun now, and then she can get married and have nisuin, or there's a case where she does miyun and she has to wait until much older and have the erusin.
So Gemara says, Bishlama ula ainu diktani ashu tagdil betinasei. Therefore, according to Ula, it makes sense because then she'll grow up and then get married, have nisuin. Elul Shmuel ashu tagdil betomar. It should be until she grows up and affirms what she said me by like. That's what it should say. Kasha, you're right. The language of the Mishnah supports the explanation of Ula, which suggests that the miyun is effective in both cases. They're two separate cases. And the miyun in one case leads to nisuin, in the other case it leads to erusin, and that's why she can't do it until she gets older. Whereas for Shmuel, it really should add a different language over here. It should have said that she has to grow up and then tomar and affirm the marriage, and that's why it's a kash over here. All right, let's read the Mishnah. Ezoiktana shetzricha lemein. Which is a ktana that has to have miyun here? This is what we described at the beginning of this year. This is kol shisua ima ve'achi aledata. That is any time that the mother and the brother married her off, lidata, with her approval, with her consent. Hisiua shelo lidata. If they married her off without her conceding to the marriage, or without her agreeing to the marriage, eina tzricha lemein. She doesn't have to reject it. The marriage doesn't go through. You need the acquiescence of the ktana in order for the marriage to go through. Any tinoket that can't guard her kiddushin doesn't need miyun because the kiddushin don't go through. She's not old enough to be in a marriage if she can't keep her kesef kiddushin or keep her kiddushin together. And that means she doesn't need miyun because the marriage never went through, even midrabanan. Rabbi Lazar Amar in Masek Tana Klum Elokim Mifuta says no action of a ktana has any bearing, but rather she's like a mifuta. So even in these marriages that are midrabanan, they're not real marriages over here. Bat Yisrael the Kohen lo tochal b'truma. Bat Yisrael that marries a Kohen, she can't eat truma because the marriage is not a real marriage. Bat Kohen li Yisrael, a Bat Kohen marries the Yisrael, tochal b'truma. She can eat with the truma beit avia because there is no real marriage over here. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer kol akva shi min ha'ish. Any problem that is from the husband's side, kilu hi ishto. Then it's as if she is his wife. Kol akvashi eina min ha'ish. Any problem that comes not from the husband's side, kilu eino ishto. That's as if it's not his wife. And the Gemara will explain this cryptic statement of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Amar Rabbi Yehuda v'amar Rabbi Matznita Tano. So Rabbi Yehuda says, and some say we have this in a braita, Rishonaya kodvim get miyun. They used to write in the get miyun, they had a document that evidenced the fact that there was miyun. Lo ra'ina bay, v'lo tzvina bay, v'leit ana bay lit nasvale. I don't want him. I'm not interested in him. I have no desire for him. And I don't want to be married to him. Came into chazu de nafish dibura. When they saw that people were writing these, they were becoming longer and they started to look like a real get. Amre ati lichlufe begito. People are going to confuse them with a real get. So therefore, takinu hachi. So then they made the takana this. B'yom ploni, miyana ploni, bat ploni, b'an pa'ana. They just made it a very short form, which was, on such and such a day, this woman annulled the marriage in front of us. And that's it. That's all they wrote in there. They didn't write any more extensive language to keep it short, to have it be differentiated from that of a get. So it was a totally separate institution from get, and people will not confuse it. If you have a sofer that's a boor, he won't think that you're writing a get over here. He won't confuse the two items. And he realized there's one thing called miyun, and there's nothing called a get. So they made it very distinctive that the miyun was totally separate or differentiated from the get. Okay, we'll stop over here, two lines down on the top of Kufchet Amud Aleph.